Hey, what's up? Welcome back to The Sound Table. I'm your host, Austin, and I'm joined by our co-host, Miranda.
What's up, guys?
We are back today for a new episode, and I think today we're going to talk about something that I hear so many people chat about on Facebook, and that is like pay-to-play. Yeah, not Facebook. Not me boomerifying myself.
I know. I was like, oh, geez.
No, just because we have the Facebook group, and it's something that I saw a topic about this like a couple weeks ago. But it's a topic of pay-to-play, and then I'm sure that's going to parlay into other things that we can kind of chat about.
Yeah.
But other than that, before we dive in, how are you, Miranda?
Oh, I'm good.
Feeling good?
Feeling good.
No feeling good, complaints. Feeling fresh. We just finished up our spring sale, so we're like, this is like the first week that we just have like a normal workload. So it's like film a podcast, film a tutorial, do my production work. But like, there's no big promotional reels. There's no finalizing a course. We're like, we're on cloud nine right now.
Yeah, a little less stressful.
Literally. With that said, thank you so much to everybody who picked up the new course. Thank you to everybody who shopped the spring sale. It was really good. We are going to be able to kind of develop some cool stuff. We have cool stuff kind of already in the works. So I'm excited to tell you all about that probably not too far from now. But other than that, yeah, let's go ahead and let's like dive into this topic, because it's one that I think a lot of people, if you're an artist who listens or if you're a producer who works with a lot of small artists, might get a lot of value out of this one. And it is the topic of, we're going to start with pay to play. So
yeah, we're kind of probably going to go down a rabbit hole of how many people take from the money that artists are making.
Right. Everybody got their piece of the pie.
Yeah. And the artist having probably the smallest slice. So I think it'll be an interesting topic.
But with that said, if you're not familiar, pay-to-play is essentially the concept of, a lot of the time, smaller artists will be approached by somebody who runs a label, or maybe somebody who's like putting on a show, or somebody who does playlisting. And pay-to-play is basically when somebody tells an artist, hey, if you give me $500, I'll put you on my playlist. Or hey, if you give me $500.
$500 for a playlist?
Oh, yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
If you give me $500, I'll let you open for the show that's coming to your local venue. Or if you, you know, sell 300 tickets for this, you can open the show. And it's essentially this whole backbone that's kind of built off of the artist having to basically pay to get in front of that platform. So it ends up being something funny where like the artist is kind of promoting whatever they're paying to also be a part of.
Right.
So like with the show thing, right? Like if I'm in a band and let's just say, I don't know, Boys Like Girls is coming to town, right? And they're playing at House of Blues, and I get, you know, I get addressed by the booker or by the promoter to kind of open up that show. They might say, they're within their rights to say, I should say, they don't always do this, but they could say, hey, we love your band. If y'all are interested in opening the show, we'll let you open the show for $750. And then typically those bands won't even make any money. So the bands have to come out to the show, they have to pay to play the show. Then, you know, maybe they'll sell some merch, but they have to pay for all of their own gas. And artists make very little live money anyway, even if it's not a pay-to-play situation. So it's one of those things of like, I just think it's so predatory, because it's also relying on that artist bringing a whole crowd of people that wouldn't have come for the headliner. So like, it's just one of those things of, I think it's a really sticky situation. And it goes all the way from like, really, really small local bands. Like even when I was in a band as a teenager, people would you know, approach us and they'd be like, hey, do you want to pay $200 to open for like Attack Attack? And at the time we were like, I don't have $200 to like also not make any money for this show and like take time off of work.
And that's if it's in your local area. Like if it's, if you live in like a smaller town and that happens, then you have to also worry about traveling and paying for all that. And
hotels.
Hotels, taking the time off of to actually be able to do that, like, that's kind of...
So it scales all the way from that, and then the next step is, like, buy-on packages for tours, which are technically still pay-to-play, of, like, I don't know, let's just say Joan was like, I'm going to go on tour. And they were like, do you want to buy on as a tour opener, where I can essentially make a bid and say, yeah, I'll spend $5,000 to open up 10 shows. And that's, like, a pretty common thing. Like, it's one of those issues of, do you consider that like promotional, like marketing money, or do you consider that exploitative pay to play? Not saying that like Joan would ever do that, by the way.
No,
like,
I think that, I don't think that is as bad as being like, I don't know. That just feels different when it's a tour versus it's like one off show at like your local music venue. And you're like, hey, you have to sell X amount of tickets or pay me X amount of money in order to play in front of 30 people.
Right. Like, because with
that
a tour, when you're buying on, you're buying on to get put on the promotional flyers that are going around, to also get promoted with the artist as part of the tour. You're going to get to sell your merch run on the tour run. Mm-hmm. And then it's just one of those things of like, when you buy onto a tour, if you can parlay that into being like a good promotional experience, mm-hmm. it might be worth the money, but it's almost never worth it for like a one-off local show, right? Yeah. Like you're never going to make your $400, $500 back. But yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things of like, where do you sit? As somebody who went to school for marketing and like understands that people will spend exorbitant amounts of money to be put into somebody else's attention, where do you consider it exploitative versus like, that is just the cost of doing business?
Yeah, it is tricky because it is something where it's like, it is free marketing. Like you're literally playing your music for people who obviously enjoy, like assuming that you're playing for a band or someone that is similar music to you. Like if you're like a heavy metal band, you're not going to open for like Olivia Rodrigo, obviously. So it's like, as long as you're playing for like the same audience, which most time you are,
right?
It is free. Well, I guess not free.
It's not free.
It is, you know, marketing, but you just have to have that like gamble of,
what's the expectation of like the outcome?
Yeah. And like how many people in there are going to care. And also every time I go to a show, at least there's not many people there for the opener. Even when it's like a big show, like a big concert, like not many people care about the opener. So that's also a risk. And it's like, okay, you're going to pay all that money to play in front of what would have been 1,000 people, but really it's only
300, 100.
Yeah,
max.
Yeah, like not that many people, because most people don't care about the opener. They just want to see the person they came to see. So it's really a gamble.
The biggest opener pool that I ever think I saw was probably at Olivia Rodrigo when Chapel Rowan opened.
And there still wasn't that, but it still wasn't full.
It wasn't full, but it was pretty packed out for her. Like, but also, I saw a 50. Lot of people there with Chapel Rowan merch, like singing along to the song. So it's one of those things of like, is the opener actually pulling in an audience that may not have gone to Olivia Rodrigo? Is the opener going to be able to convert some of the fans that specifically went for Olivia Rodrigo and maybe found a new artist? Are they going to be able to sell merchandise? Like,
yeah,
there are so many things that the margins are so small for an artist as is that when you then consider having to buy onto a tour or having to fund a merch run that you might not sell out of, or having to travel state to state, city to city, it adds up really, really quick. And if you have to pay straight off the bat to even have that opportunity in the first place, it is tough for people to like compete, especially you look at, you know, label artists like you mentioned earlier off of the podcast that like Taylor Swift had a bunch of openers, like Gracie Abrams. Yeah. I don't know if she bought onto that tour. She very well could have. If I had to assume, I would assume her label did buy onto that tour because that's typical.
Right.
But like, she has a very, very well-off father who's one of the biggest directors of the 21st century.
I did not know that until the other day.
Yeah.
Little Nepo baby.
Classic Nepo baby.
I mean,
and she signed to a massive label.
If you're a talented Nepo baby, who cares?
The thing is, like, all of Taylor Swift's openers, Muna, Sabrina Carpenter, Biapa Doobie, everybody, signed to a massive label who's thinking, if we can pay upwards of hundreds of thousands of dollars for our artists to open these shows, we're probably going to make that money back because we can convert some of the Taylor Swift fans.
Yeah.
Where somebody who's in a local band that has the opportunity to open for Simple Plan when they come back into town is like, are you going to be playing in front of 70 people? Like, do you really think that's going to be worth it? And it's one of those things of like, I see it a lot on the really small scale where it gets really predatory, especially to like young bands. Like when I was in a band as a teenager, it was everywhere. There were shows that people were coming and telling us we had to sell 200 tickets.
Yeah.
I was like, 200 tickets would pack out the American Legion. Why would we not be fucking headlining that at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just one of those weird things of the needs, whether it's the money needs or the ticket sale needs or whatever, they need to match like the opportunity that's going to present to the artist or to the band.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time that I don't think that it does. Even like going back to, we kind of mentioned pay to play for playlisting.
That to me is weird.
That's insane because a lot of those times those playlists end up finding out that like they just send them out to like bot farms. They're not even real streams.
It also doesn't cost you anything to create a playlist. Like, sure, it takes your time, which, you know, you should be paid for your time.
I'm not even upset with people paying just like paying a small fee to like submit to a playlist to be heard.
Like, what's that website?
Submit Hub.
Or
Groover or like whatever. Like, I've done that and it's worked out well for me.
Yeah.
And like, the thing is, you're not paying them to be put on their playlist. You're paying them for their time to listen to your song to determine if they want to put you on your playlist.
Yeah, that's different.
But once you get picked, I'm not going to pay $1,000 to get put on Dynamic's channel. I'm not going to pay $1,000 to get put on Popular Music. I pay like the small couple dollar fee to submit a song. Like, some of these artists will get hit up by these massive, massive playlists with like hundreds of thousands of followers.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, if you want a top 10 spot of that playlist, it's 10 grand.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. It's insane.
Also, if you can afford 10 grand, aren't you probably a pretty successful artist? Like, what the hell? Who can afford that? That's crazy. That to me is a little, because especially with a playlist, like, isn't the point of a playlist for it to like be a vibe and like have a mood to it?
Right.
And then you're just like making people pay to get on it. It kind of seems like it defeats
the purpose. What's the quality of that playlist?
Yeah. Like, it kind of seems like it defeats the purpose of the playlist. The quality of that playlist is people who can afford to pay to get on it.
Right.
And then like, what if there's someone that you really want on that place, but they don't want to pay? I guess they don't care. I was going to say that. Yeah, that to me is odd. Even Submit, I don't know. The Submit Hub thing isn't weird. Like, I do understand. I get both sides. Like, I get why you're like, well, if I'm going to be like taking the time to listen to these, like, you could get thousands of submissions. So you need to put up a paywall. So then you have that whittles it down to people who are very serious. Sure. Because then everyone would just submit to your playlist to be heard. So like, I do understand that in a way. And like, you know, they are taking the time to listen to the song, but they listen to 30 seconds of
90
it,
now.
It? Oh, now it's 9. Do you have to pay to have that much listen to it, though?
Yeah, it's $1 per submission.
But don't you have to pay more for them to listen to more?
No.
Oh, I thought you did for some.
No, you can select if you want them to listen to 30 seconds, but then they have to give you really detailed feedback. Or if they listen to 90 seconds, but then they have to give very general feedback. Got and my thing is like, I like my songs. I think if you give it 90 seconds, you're probably going to like it. And if you don't like it by 90 seconds, I don't really care what you have to say about my song.
That's
either
funny.
You want to add it or you don't.
Detailed feedback in 30 seconds seems ironic to me, because I'm like, how much feedback can you give a song in 30 seconds? Like, detailed, like 30
seconds. Yeah, maybe
like,
this makes me an crazy asshole, but like, I never care about their opinions on Submit Hub. I'm like, you either want the song or you don't. Like, my song is done. Yeah. I am not open for constructive feedback. You can give it, but I'm not going to listen.
Well, yeah, that's my thing. Like, for one, it's done. But for two, everyone is so biased. Like, why would you ask someone who doesn't even know your music if they're a fan of your music? Like, shouldn't you be asking your fans for feedback on your music? People who actually like actively listen to it, they're probably the ones that should be giving you the feedback because they already like your stuff. But some person on Submit Hub, they might not like the type of music that you may even make.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's one of those things of, I think a lot of people get a sour taste in their mouth because they pay the small fee and then don't really have any luck. So then they might have spent $60 and didn't get on a single playlist, but it's like, well, maybe your song wasn't good. You know, like, you can't be that mad about that. Also, $60 to have 60 opportunities in the grand scheme of things, not that crazy. You could have also spent $20 and now your song has millions of views. Like, there's just, it's like that imbalance of like, could be worth it if the song's really good, probably not worth it if the song's not. And I think touring is kind of the same.
Like, everyone thinks their song is good. They're not going to release it thinking that it's shit. So
yeah, I think people need to practice objectivity a little bit more. Like, I don't know. Like, okay, so going back to the pay to play for like festivals and stuff, right? Yeah. We just watched Coachella. I'm sure most of those people.
We didn't really watch it. We turned it on for 5 seconds.
Scanned it.
We watched Sabrina Carpenter. Actually, we did watch her.
I'm sure most of those people got paid rather well. The thing is, though, is that like, smaller festivals are like festivals that have their bills that they send out where it's like, oh, we have 30 artists or whatever. They'll almost always still have openers that happen before any of those artists start. So like, you go to like Blue Ridge, right? It's a big rock and metal festival. You're going to see the 40 bands that are on the list. They're probably going to have 10, 15 others that are local bands that are not even on that list.
Yeah, they probably do have to pay.
They paid. And you know, I know because I know somebody who has paid very well to play the festival and like it was not worth it at all.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things of like, that's when I consider it exploitive, right? Like, these festivals know we have all of these marquee artists that we're paying anywhere between thousands of dollars to tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, that's
for their
what I'm saying. Like, what is the difference?
And because then, fuck me, that's being funded by some band that drove up from Florida to go to Virginia to play in front of 30 people that are there early in the morning. Like,
yeah, you pay
for
like
hundreds
the shittiest
or
times.
Like, I think the person that I'm talking about, I think their band paid like $2,000 to play it.
That's kind of
you know
a
who
lot.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But it's one of those things of like, it seems like a good opportunity for them because they're like, oh, we get to play the same festivals like Avenged Sevenfold and Mudvayne and like all of these big metal bands. And it's
but if you're playing
but you're
playing at 10 a.m. and they're playing at 6 p.m.
It's like two whole different things. Like, you start before the openers of the festival start. And so like, that's when I consider it exploitative, because it's hard to, like, I feel like an asshole because I'm like, that is a cool opportunity, but also, like, I feel like I should warn you, that's not the same. Like, that, you don't get to say that you played on that tour because you bought on to play in the morning to open up. Like, you were not on the bill. They did not pay you. There were probably less than 100 people in the crowd. Like,
I'd be curious how much the bigger bands of that are getting paid, because, like, Coachella, the least few people that get paid, I was reading, was like 10 grand, but the most they, like, a lot of the top people get paid like 10 grand. Yeah, 10 grand, sorry. And then the most they get paid is like $8 million. Yeah. Like, that's a really big difference. I don't think people at this are making $8 million.
I think that if you're in one of the, like, Avenged Sevenfold, A Day to Remember, big headline, like, if you're on the main stage for the Saturday night, the Sunday night, or whatever,
yeah,
I would assume it's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
And
that's
then I'm sure it scales down to, like, you know, maybe 3 grand, 5 grand, 10 grand, 20 grand, 50 grand, 200, like, it just scales depending on how many people you're bringing. What part are you? Are you Friday, Saturday, Sunday? It's one of those things of, like, we'll never know what everybody gets paid unless they're pretty transparent, which I wish, honestly, more people would be.
Yeah. If more people were transparent, then this industry couldn't be as predatory and fucked up as it is, honestly, because then if everyone was communicating, it's like how they say at your job, you're not supposed to talk about how much money you make. But then people are like, they just don't want us talking about it because then they don't want us all realizing, oh, I don't get, like, we all don't get paid enough, or like, whatever the situation
is. It
is
so immoral to tell somebody not to talk about their pay to a coworker.
Yeah. And,
like, I understand why if people don't want to talk about their income, because, like, some people are private about that, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But if I'm doing the same exact job as somebody, then I should know what they make, because I should be making the same goddamn thing.
Especially, like, if you're doing the same job, or if you're both doing the job, but you're the better one at your job.
You're making 70 grand and I'm making 48. Like, it's like big differences that I see sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, not to go off on a tangent about that.
Yeah, we'll go off on a tangent. Like, you guys already know that, but.
But there's other examples too of, like, pay to play. There was one that I was just thinking of that literally has already left my mind.
No, but you know what I was going to say? I didn't realize either. I didn't like think about it, I guess. I was reading that they have to pay for their sets at Coach. I mean, pay for their, like, stage sets.
Yeah.
Like, Cardi B was talking about how in 2018 when she played, she got paid $70,000 per weekend that she played, but her set cost her $300,000. So, like, she lost money on that. And, like, Sabrina Carpenter, this past Coachella, her set was amazing.
Yeah.
And she was not the headliner. Like,
sometimes
she was,
you
not
get a stipend for that if you're, like, a bigger
person.
Well,
that's what I would be curious about, is, like, if she paid 100% out of pocket, if they pay for, like, a little bit of that, or, and even, like, the visuals. Like, she had so many visuals, like, little things that she had pre-recorded beforehand. It's like, I'd be curious to know how much of that, how much she's actually making. And she is somebody with, you know, she's a big name.
Yeah.
Like, she's a household name.
Hundreds of millions
point.
Of streams.
Yeah. So it's like, that's kind of crazy to think about.
One of the funniest, like, levels of, like, a technically, like, a pay to play thing, or, like, a playing for exposure, is the Super Bowl to me. I feel like nobody knows that those artists don't get paid, like, a dollar.
Yeah.
And it's funny that, like, you'll see somebody like The Weeknd or somebody like Shakira or whatever do those. Granted, I know that they get a shit ton of publicity. Like, they'll do it and then
they're
several albums will go, like, number one for a couple weeks. But it is just so funny that, like, the offer of, like, exposure even works for literally the highest selling record of all time with, like, The Weeknd and Blinding Lights.
Yeah.
Is it like, yeah, I know that, like, technically we probably should pay you a couple million dollars for this because you're also bringing in people to watch this and you're putting on a whole performance.
Are they, though?
But, like,
who's paying Super Bowl price tickets to go see The Weeknd?
No, I mean on TV. Or, like the ad revenue
TV.
From, like...
That's true, because a lot of people do turn on the Super Bowl just to watch the halftime show.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's fair.
They get paid nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, because for one, those people who are performing in the Super Bowl...
Don't need it.
They're fucking fine. But, like, their sets, for example, the stages that they have, they're not paying for that. I'm sure the NFL is paying for
that. Yeah, that is put on by the Super Bowl.
So it's like... I don't really feel that bad that fucking Usher isn't getting paid when that dude's worth
either.
Millions of dollars. Yeah, it is funny. It is just funny how, like, exposure
never
dies. Yeah, it's a little consistent. It's a little consistent, at least.
If the industry is anything, it'd be but consistent that exposure is the best way to pay an artist.
I'm sure a lot of people, though, would pay a lot of money to play at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, imagine if the Super Bowl did pay to play. Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would.
Who do you think would do it? Like, if there was an artist who was like, I'd pay to play the Super Bowl.
I don't know. I don't know any, like,
You know what? I have somebody specific in mind that's like trying to come back with music, and I just don't think it's popping like they're expecting.
Ooh.
I would assume it'd be like somebody like Justin Timberlake.
I knew he just dropped a new record. Justin Timberlake.
Not really hitting like I think it probably was expected to.
Yeah.
Or even like,
I didn't even know he had
even like
a new
Kendrick
album.
With his last album, like Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, mm-hmm. didn't really hit numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So like anybody that I think has a big project to promote.
Well, didn't Usher? Or am I tripping?
Yeah, Usher just had a new album.
I was like, he had a new
they
album.
They almost always have something to promote. Like, yeah. That's why they do it.
Not Rihanna.
Yeah, not Rihanna.
She just said, I'm going to play this shit pregnant and then dip out.
Yeah, but she still has, like, her makeup brand and her underwear
brand.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, she has companies. I was just saying she didn't have, like, an album or anything like that. And I don't feel like when The Weeknd played, he had a new... I mean, his album was new-ish, but it wasn't, like, coming out that week.
Yeah. I don't know. There was one other example of pay-to-play that I literally had on my mind, and it has just completely drifted away into the ether.
Floated away.
It's gone.
I mean, we can take the time to sit here and think about it if you
it's
want.
It's dead.
I can cut it.
No cuts on this podcast. Gigantic cut.
Yeah. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about.
Go ahead.
So until you can remember what you want to talk about. One that I think is really fucked up is the fact that venues take a percentage of merch sales.
Yeah.
What in the hell is up with that? That is so weird to me.
Sometimes it's a big ass percent too.
Why? And I know people, oh, well, they pay the employees to for the merch, like the people who are giving out the merch. I understand that a lot of the time those are employees of the arena.
No, they're not. Those tour with the band.
Not all of them. A lot of them, like some of the ones at the Olivia Rodrigo show, they worked at Amelie.
A lot of the time they'll travel with the band. Like, I know people who do merch runs with, like, gigantic bands.
Yeah, like, smaller bands. But I'm saying, like, Taylor Swift, Olivia Rodrigo, those people work in that arena.
Yeah,
like,
but
arena
I think
tours is
they
what
should
I'm
just get 1099
about.
As, like, an independent contractor. Like, we paid you $20 an hour for 4 hours this night. Like, well, I don't think a cut.
No. But I'm saying, like, they already work for the arena.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't really...
Yeah, I, like...
Understand it, that.
If the arena's providing stuff, I think that the artist should be invoiced to pay that.
Yeah, sure. Invoice them to pay the
but
employees.
An overall but merch cut
taking
is
like
crazy.
A merch cut is crazy because the artist isn't getting a cut of the beverages, the alcohol, the food, like the parking.
Yeah, the parking is crazy.
Parking is such a scam. Let me not even get on my soapbox about this. That pisses me off. The fact they have to pay like $40 to park in a parking garage that's already there that was made for the arena that you're going to.
That you spent $300 a piece to go fucking sit at for
yes,
2 hours.
And you can only park in that arena or that parking lot if you're going to said arena. Anyway. But yeah, they're not getting a percentage of anything that the arena is making. So why is the artist having to give you a cut of the merch?
Well, like,
I don't understand that at all.
We talked about it a little bit we did an episode about talking about merch where we kind of mentioned that like, merch has overhead, right? Like, you have to pay for that physical product. You have to pay for the designers. Sometimes the designers are, like, they basically get royalties for every time it sells. And so, like, sometimes a shirt that you might pay $40 for costs the artist, you know, $10, $15, $20 or whatever. They have to be transported. They have to mm-hmm. be set up. And then, like, the venue is supposed to take 30%
yeah.
for literally just, like, allowing them to set their shit up on a table outside of a concession stand.
That's high. That's what I'm saying. If they did, it would be, like, 2% just as like a tax or whatever, or just to like cover their employees that they have to have like extra employees to hand out the merch or whatever. Like, I would understand that, but like charging like 30%?
It's just one of those things too, where I think so many topics that we talk about on this podcast regularly come back to the fact that like none of this is standardized. Like,
yeah,
a venue can take whatever the fuck they want for a merch cut.
Yep.
Like, you could just...
I'm sure they're all different.
...not be allowed to sell merch there. Like,
mm-hmm.
there is no system that's like, oh, to buy onto a show, it's X amount of expected ticket sales. Or, like, there's no formula for anybody to know how the fuck they're supposed to not get taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what your merch cut's going to be. You don't know what the buy-on package is going to be. You don't know how many tickets you're going to be expected to sell. You don't know what the percentage of ticket revenue you might be getting if you're an opener, if you get any. You don't know how many people are actually going to stick around and watch your set. Like,
yeah,
it's just so insane that like there is literally no standard for anything in the music industry.
Just another podcast about how there needs to be a union for artists.
Union on
I'm telling you, I genuinely cannot believe there's not, because it seems like.
But there's like four for film people.
Yeah. And you know what's weird is that when you look at the film industry, like back before there was a union, like in like the like silent film eras, like the 20s or whatever, it was so predatory and disgusting. You guys, like, do some research. It's like really not nice. Like, it's really bad. And then thankfully now, I mean, granted, it's still, there's still people who are in the industry who are disgusting, but now that it's unionized, you're at least a little more protected.
Right.
And it's like, I don't understand how the music industry doesn't have like music's been around for just as long. So why, if not longer?
Labels lose money.
Yeah. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Outside of pay to play, outside of merch cuts, outside of like
everything
playlisting,
else artists don't make money on.
Yeah. What do you think is like another like
stolen
predatory thing that's kind of taken out of an art? Oh, I remember what I was going to say for pay to play. It just brought it back. I'm a fucking genius. I'm locked in.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hey, everybody. Today we're on the podcast. We're absolutely dialed in. No.
Discovered that guy.
I was going to talk about Spotify's discovery mode. Have you heard about that?
I don't have Spotify, so no.
Well, I mean, it's for people who upload. So like when I released Ruin My Life, you have the option to tell Spotify, I want to keep the entire Spotify revenue, which is dog shit anyway.
Yeah, you're 3 cents.
Yeah, no. It's like 0.00.
Oh, I meant 3 cents total.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like all of your streams.
For billions of streams.
Yeah, yeah. You get 3 cents.
No, so you have the option to tell Spotify, I don't know if they still have this. Maybe they got rid of it when they realized it was dog shit. But you have the option to tell them, instead of me taking the full payout from you guys, I actually want you to kind of passively promote my music, put it in more playlists, put it in more people's Discover Weekly, and pay me out a much lower percentage.
Much lower? How can it get much fucking lower? It's on the floor.
What's 0% of zero?
What the hell?
So what's funny about this is like, at first you think like, okay, maybe it's worth it, right? Like, I'm not making any fucking money off Spotify anyway. Like, maybe I'll give them a little bit of money, getting some playlists, give myself a little bit of an edge, right? Because that's what everybody thought.
Sorry, I was just looking up Spotify's net worth as of April 16th, 2024. Do you want to take a guess?
$200 billion.
No.
$300 billion.
$56.4 billion.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Billion?
They're still in the red as a company.
I thought it would be in the mill. How the fuck are they in the red? How much are they paying their goddamn employees?
Nothing.
Like their head employees, I mean. Not like the,
yeah.
Not
yeah.
The people who actually do the work, the people at the top who don't do any of the work.
Top with a capital T.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Drake diss.
Oh my God, no.
What was I saying before I was so rudely interrupted?
Oh. Mm.
Not the vibes are unreal. Back to my original point. The discovery mode, at first I was like thinking like a capitalist. I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, I'm not going to get paid any money from Spotify anyway. Fuck them. I'm going to have them promote my music.
Yeah.
And pay me nothing. I don't care. I put my songs on fucking SoundCloud and YouTube and make no money. I don't give
right.
a shit. Until I realized everybody's thinking that. So everybody's in discovery mode. So now
yeah.
we're all still competing because there's not like a limit, right? They're not like only the first 1% of artists who take advantage of it can ever do it.
Yeah.
They're just like, hey, fucking everybody can do this. And we'll just pay everybody
That's
less
true.
Money.
That's
true. So now they've got... They said, here's the whole piece of the pie that y'all are all arguing for. We're going to paint the illusion that we're going to give you a smaller pie. You can take a less percentage out of, but reach a lot more people. Then everybody just went to that.
Yeah.
So now, instead of making 0.00038, now you make 0.00014.
Yeah.
And you're still competing with 90% of the industry because everybody's thinking, fuck it, Spotify's not paying me anyway. Like, yeah. I might as well just let them promote my music.
You would think they would do it where, like, it'd be a percentage each month, like certain amount of people can do it each month. And then if like you're within that, or it's like a lottery system, like if you decide to do it, like, okay, this month you got, or this week even, like you got chose to be promoted more.
Or like you could apply whatever. For it and they could be like, hey, the song has playlist potential. If you want, we can put you on discovery mode. We only do this for the top 1% of injuries or whatever. Like
yeah.
there has to be some baseline for them to not just be like, literally any song could go on discovery mode.
Maybe it's not a thing anymore.
And in which case, they just paid everybody less money. Genius way to basically think all of us were going to fight for you know, a bigger bite out of the pie. And then they were like, you idiots. Like, yeah. It's the same thing. We just pay you less money.
Yeah.
There was another thing that I was going to mention, too. I'm a little scatterbrained today.
You had a coffee and now you're drinking something with caffeine. Too much caffeine. Piss me off about Spotify, though, is then they pay Joe Rogan $100 million for his fucking podcast.
Joe Rogan's fucking awesome.
Okay, you better quit with that.
I'm joking.
But they don't pay artists? Like, what the hell?
I don't know, man. Like, the thing is, like, what are you going to do? Like,
yeah. I mean, I understand it's like we're all obviously paying way less for music. Like, obviously, because you pay $10 a month, $15, whatever it is a month for your Spotify. But obviously, you're not only listening to 15 songs in a month where, you know, you used to pay like a dollar a song.
Yeah, so the barrier to entry, the barrier of entry for listening to music is just too low. There's like no value on music anymore.
Yeah, but
at all.
Think about how many users they have that do pay. And like, I don't know. It seems like paying a fraction of a penny per stream is kind of crazy.
Oh, that reminds me of what I was going to say. Did you hear about Spotify? I think they do still have this engaged. They said that unless you got 1,000 streams or whatever for a month, or unless you had like a certain amount of monthly listeners or something, they weren't going to pay you.
Yeah, a certain amount of streams, I think. If you have under 1,000, they're like not going to pay you out.
I want to hear your thoughts.
At first, I was like, that's kind of shitty. But then I was like, what is that? Like $3, like literally like $3.
I'll do math.
Because it can't be much.
I think you have to get 1,000 streams.
Yeah, I think it is 1,000. I remember hearing you talk about it and you asking me about it, because we kind of sometimes will have, $4. We'll sometimes have differing opinions, which like I do understand that $4 is still $4 and like you did earn that. I totally get it. But I do understand their logic of like it's costing more money to like send out these invoices.
Why are we paying hundreds of millions of people why are we paying out on hundreds of millions of songs a dollar, 50 cents, $2? Mm-hmm. When instead we could use that money, pull it all together, and then to top, 10%. Because only like 10% of artists even have over that on their songs. Like,
yeah.
That's what was alarming when I saw it, was they were like, yeah, the majority of people will be affected by this because the majority of songs that get uploaded every day will never hit 1,000 streams.
But you know what I'm curious of too? So now that they're implementing that, are they upping the percentage that artists are getting paid?
That's what I was going to say. I was not affected by that. I do well over that.
Ooh,
I don't see any money.
That's what I'm saying. So like,
yeah, let me go check my
TuneCore. Where is that money going is what I want to know. Because if now you're not paying hundreds
going all
of
the way
thousands,
to the top.
Yeah, hundreds and thousands of people, you're not paying them that $4, like that's going to add up. So like, I'm like,
okay, Robin
money?
Hood, where are you redistributing this fucking wealth?
Yeah, like
what's really
money?
Going on here?
Yeah, where is the money? Because that doesn't really make any sense to me if you're not paying artists more, which I don't think they are. I wanted to ask, though, with the Spotify thing,
sure.
1,000 streams on a song in general. So once your song reaches 1,001 streams, you start getting paid?
I think so. I don't know. Let me check.
And then I'm curious, too, so if your song has 1,000 streams the first, month, and then the next month it only gets 900 streams, do you then not get paid for that 900 streams because it didn't reach 1,000? Do you know what I'm saying? Is it like you have to get 1,000 streams each month in order to get a payout? Or
1,000 streams annually.
Oh, annually?
Yeah. 60% of tracks will not be able to rack royalties because 60% of songs on Spotify will not get 1,000 streams in a year.
I don't know why I'm thinking monthly. Okay, so a year. You have a year to make $4.
You didn't
make
$4 in a year?
Yeah.
You got bigger issues.
Yeah. Then that probably, honestly, I mean, that is going to save them a lot of money, obviously, but because if it's 60% of users, that seems, even though, granted, that's meaning that like...
a couple bucks a piece for 60% of all users on
Spotify. You're assuming, though, that they're all getting close to 1,000.
Yeah,
like,
some of them probably get like
3.
30.
Yeah, they could be getting 3. Like, you never know. So, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know. If you're not racking up 1,000 streams annually, then like money should not be on your mind with music.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you really care about the money?
Were you even checking your DistroKid? Like, what is happening?
They probably don't even have it set up.
Yeah. Let's play a little hypothetical.
Okay.
If you were an artist, pick a genre. Like what kind of artist would you be? Because we have to have a basis.
I don't know. Pop artist, I guess.
Okay. Similar.
Want to be a pop star.
Like Olivia Rodrigo pop star, like Taylor Swift pop star, like angsty.
Pick whichever one.
Let's just say you had $10,000 to like buy onto a tour opener.
Uh-huh.
For anybody smaller than Olivia Rodrigo.
Okay.
Who would you buy onto? So like, who do you think would be like a good...
Like if I was like an Olivia Rodrigo type of artist, yeah. Let's say that. Okay. Maybe... Well, it doesn't have to include people who are currently touring because I don't know who currently is touring.
No.
Okay. I almost would think of like maybe like a Paramore.
Okay.
Kind of thing because...
That's kind of cool. Even though I think they might be as big, if not bigger, than Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing.
They opened for Taylor.
That's true. But they just don't tour as much. So that's why that was my thought.
I think it's hard. Like I don't know
small artists. So
that's true. I think it's easy for people to be like, oh, I would do this because they're like a similar artist. But like when I'm thinking about bands that like it would be worth opening for, artists that is worth opening for, more importantly than like how one-to-one is the music a match, I'm like, how dedicated are their fans?
Yes. Or if they see,
like, that's why I think so many of the Olivia Rodrigo fans showed up for Chapel Rowan, and so many of the Taylor Swift fans ended up listening to Sabrina Carpenter or Muna or Biaba Doobie or Gracie Abrams, is because like you're talking about dedicated fan bases. Where if I were to go open for, I don't know, like I don't want to throw...
Paramore fans are dedicated. They've been fans for like 15 years at this point.
For sure. But like so if I went and opened for like, let's just say Bleachers. I love Bleachers. Jack Antonoff is huge. I don't know how dedicated his fans would be to come for an opener.
Yeah. Or even like The Weeknd. Like I don't think fans are that dedicated for that either. Yeah.
They're there for one specific person and that's it. And so like, I was just thinking like that would be such a funny exercise to just think of like, what artist would actually be worth the money opening for? Like, which ones have a higher return on investment? I think that it has to be a balance of, like, the music has to be a good match. The fan base has to be a good match.
Yeah. It's got to be, like, a small pool. It's got to be a
dedicated fan base, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of the time what'll happen, too, with like, tours is, like, a lot of the time the artists are under the same label.
Yes.
And so the label is using openers as, like, a way to promote that artist.
Yeah, of course. They're putting money back in their own pockets.
Like, even, like, Platinum's tour that he just went on.
Yeah.
Those are all signed to his label now.
Right, except Riley.
Yeah, but Riley was kind of just like a last minute, like...
He's also the tour manager, so that worked out.
But like, Vanna and Chris Gray and Shaker, like, they're all...
Promoting his own.
They were on that tour to promote themselves being under, I think, Rebellion. Rebellious is the name of the label. Congrats on that, by the way, Michael, like, if you watch this.
Platinum's label, though. But, and like, he's one... Like, they're also his friends, so I think that is a little different.
I think that's where it comes into... handy though, like having openers. Like, I think if you can be an opener to the point where it's like you're trying to build long-term relationships with like that artist or that label or that fan base, I think that that is such a better bang for buck than doing like one-off. It would be really cool for me to go open for, you know, Black Bear, but like how many people are actually going to give a shit?
Yeah.
What are you looking up?
I was looking up who opened for Drake. Because I know Drake has his Drake has his own label, so I was just
Party
curious.
Next Door.
It says Lil Durk, the second leg of the tour.
Lil Durk?
Is it all a Blur tour? Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lil Durk. And then J. Cole?
Oh yeah, J. Cole did.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if J. Cole's on Drake's label or Lil Durk is.
I don't know.
Lil Durk. Who I don't even know who's on Drake's label if I'm being honest, but
I love Mekonnen. Party Next Door.
Party Next Door opened for Halsey.
Yeah, that was a great opener.
Mm-hmm.
Party Next Door.
But they're not on the same label because Halsey ain't on Drake's label.
OVO.
Here, let me look up Lil Durk and see what he's on.
Speaking of Drake, what did you think of the diss track?
I want to... He's on Def Jam. Well...
Is it AI or is it not AI?
I don't think it's AI. Because I think the vocal inflections are too realistic if it's AI. If it's AI, it's scary.
Yeah.
I also find leaks very funny because...
Come on, like, you drop that.
I'm like,
come on.
As like someone whose husband's a music producer, I'm like, how is shit getting leaked? Because like, yes, you send songs to your friends sometimes, but like literally your closest friends.
You don't get to be Drake talking about how you keep your hard drives in like a manned safe, and then things get, something as big as this gets leaked.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I find that hard to believe. And it wasn't like leaked as in like someone was in the studio recording on their
phone.
Like
the master came out.
Yeah, it's like literally like a final master of a song. I'm like, please, I don't believe for a second that that was leaked.
Also got leaked for when? When were you going to drop that? The beef started 2 weeks ago. Bitch, you're overdue. Like, right. Turn it in.
Yeah, why not just drop it is what I don't get. Why people do leaks. Maybe they do leaks to then like see how it's going to be received. And then they're like, oh, okay, it got received well. I'll go ahead and drop it. So or if it gets shit on, they never
drop
it. Here's
what I was going to say. This is not on the topic of this podcast episode at all.
Yeah, we're kind of switching lanes.
But I just wanted to chat. I just want to talk bullshit, honestly. Mm-hmm. What I thought was, I was like, what if this is a leak? So then there's like that plausible deniability of if people don't like it, he can just
that's
be like,
what I'm saying.
That's just AI. That wasn't even me.
That's what I'm saying.
Or if people love it, he could be like, that's not fucking AI. That was me.
Yeah.
It's like, I think about the Taylor Swift leaks, right? And it's like,
oh my God.
What, how funny would it be if an artist was like, I don't know if people are going to like this. Let me leak an AI version.
Yeah.
And then it's their song.
But the AI versions sound like AI.
Yeah, but
I
mean, even I'm thinking of like how funny of a concept it would be if somebody were to like AI their own voice with their own voice.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Are people going to fuck with this or no?
Yeah.
Because like there are so many of the Taylor Swift leaks where people are like, this is garbage. This better not be a leak. And I'm like, that would be so funny if she released it just to like put out a tastemaker, like a little sampler. Be like, fuck this song.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. If it's really good, she can be like, that wasn't AI. It got leaked, but somebody AI'd it, but it was a real song.
Yeah. But I'm sure people can like, I don't know, hack into stuff some way.
Hack into mainframe.
Yeah. But like, I don't know how that would work. Like, what are you hacking into? His DistroKid account? Like, how the fuck is
he's a DistroKid?
I don't know.
No, TuneCore, I don't know. I've never like sent songs to Drake, so I don't know how.
You've never sent songs to Drake?
Drake?
What?
No, so I don't know how secure it is, but like, I don't know. Like, I have worked with bigger artists, or I'm like friends with bigger artists who will send me stuff, and I'm like, this is just on a public Dropbox link. It's like,
How can it be public? It's not public if they...
But it's like a Dropbox link that like they don't have to keep sending. Like it's a Dropbox link that if they sent me, I could just send that link to somebody. It's not like a one-time link.
Yeah.
Or like I could save that song to my Dropbox and just send it out from there.
Yeah, but I'm saying like who is someone as big as Drake sending songs to where that would happen? That's what I'm saying. Like even when you're sharing your songs with your friends, like normally they're people that you're very close to and you could very easily track it back to them.
Yeah. Also, I wouldn't really care if they showed anybody.
No, but you can send out, I'm saying if it was like a client, but like you could send out private links as well if Drake is sending out links to people. I'm just like, how does something when you're that big of an artist get leaked? That's why I'm like, are people like, the way people are hacking into, because obviously people can hack into people's shit. We know that. People have leaked far more delicate content than songs. So I'm like, how does that work?
So you vote not AI.
No, I don't think it's... Do you think it's AI?
No. Did you like it?
I don't... I'm not like a Drake fan, so I don't really feel like I care, if I'm being honest.
No, everybody wants to hear a white girl's opinion on hip-hop beef. Let's go.
Well, a lot of white girls listen to Drake, so it's kind of shocking that I don't, I guess.
Fair.
But, yeah, I don't really have an opinion. It sounds like... It's good, I guess. I mean, he has some funny bars in there. I liked his Metro Boomin one. I'm gonna put some drums on it. That was funny.
I'll tell you what, it was a better diss than Kendrick's. Kendrick's shit was weak.
Yeah, I don't think Kendrick, which granted, what do I know? But I don't feel like he's like made for beef like that. He kind of seems like he raps about more like important
like conscious stuff.
Shit. Yeah, like no offense to beef, but most of it is petty and unnecessary in my opinion. And it's just used as like a way to promote yourself or the, you know, it's just kind of like obviously, look, we're talking about it and so is everybody else in the world. So I think it's a good way to be promotional, but it doesn't really seem like...
I just feel like it's kind of an insane choice to be like, I'm going to beef with Drake, knowing that he's already beefed with like 4 or 5 people.
Maybe that's why he beefed with him, because he's like, he's already done it 1,000 times. People are probably over it. Because then I literally saw people being like, oh, how are this many people beefing with Drake? And they named like a bunch of people that are beefing with him. They're like, how can it be this many people? And then it's like, okay, well, does that make Drake look bad? Because he's like, oh, well, maybe he's actually an asshole because how can this many people have this common enemy?
Maybe.
So it's like, maybe he was like, nah, fuck him. I'm going to also beef with him. I don't know.
Maybe. It was just funny to me because I was like, Drake has a track record of coming out of beefs pretty good. I mean, other than Twista telling the world that he has a, or not Twista, Pusha T telling the world that he has a child, yeah. Making him be a daddy.
Yeah.
Making him be the daddy that stepped up.
Hopefully he already was being a father. That's why he knew about it.
Just more public.
Yeah, I just had to put it publicly.
But I was just like, damn, like going to beef with somebody that is pretty consistent, like every few years for like the past 10 years, had to beef with somebody and come out pretty good.
Yeah.
Crazy.
How was him with Meek Mill though? Did Meek Mill? Because I feel like Meek Mill would like rip him apart.
No, Drake kind of bodied him with back to back.
Really?
Yeah.
That's surprising to me.
And then, I don't know, then they became friends and did a bunch of songs together.
That's what I'm saying.
Now they're beefing again because Drake's beefing with Rick Ross, and Rick Ross and Meek Mill are like...
Not to be a dick, but where the fuck did Rick Ross come from? Where has that man been? He was like huge back in the day, but I'm like...
Are you fat shaming?
What? No. What about his music career? I don't even know what the man looks like. But, you know, back in like the mid-2000s...
I just don't know how he went from like owning a bunch of Wingstops... Like shilling lemon pepper wings and hanging out with cows on your farm. So now you're getting involved in the Drake and Kendrick beef.
He has cows?
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen his? Yeah.
Oh, wait. I think he showed me a video of him where he just like bought a cow. Yeah. I do remember
Crazy, though.
You know what I'm saying? Like what? I don't feel like he's been like releasing. Maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't know that he had been like releasing a bunch of music. So then like to just be like beefing with somebody all of a sudden, I'm like, what the hell?
Crazy conscious choice too, to beef with a guy who is literally on all of your top songs.
Who?
Every Rick Ross hit, Drake is on.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I don't know. I can't name you one Rick Ross. I know his songs. I just can't name one.
I don't know. It's just funny to me. Anyway, I don't want to talk about hip hop beef too much. It's
no, what do we
a
know?
Funny little aside that
it's just interesting.
Came to my mind. But is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of like pay to play, artists getting scammed, bamboozled?
Trying to think if there's any way else that artists get scammed, which there's not. There's it's a pretty long list. So who's to say?
Yeah.
But
honestly, if you're an artist, I would just assume that everybody's trying to scam you all the time. So just stay on your toes.
Yeah, be careful.
It sounds very cynical, but like the music industry fucking sucks. So
it does, yeah. And it's some people are preying on people's like hopes and dreams, which is fucked up. Like if it's your dream to be an artist one day, people are obviously gonna
And there's that weird like, yeah, it costs a lot of money and time and stuff now, but you're gonna be rich one day.
Yeah.
Dude, there's so many artists out there that are massive that are not rich. Oh, yeah, that was what reminded me of the
NSYNC,
Drake like, beef. Like
The whole
Drake song is stemmed off of Kendrick having to drop and give his label 50.
50 what?
Percent.
Oh, 50%.
Of everything.
Well, okay, first of all, Drake, that's because you have your own label.
That's what he's saying, though. He's like, how are you trying to talk to me? You don't even own your own label. Like,
but who cares? It's not really about who owns what. He's also, didn't Drake also have beef with The Weeknd? The Weeknd owns his own label.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, I don't know. Who cares if an artist doesn't own their own label? I don't think that says anything. Beyonce doesn't own her own label. She's one of the biggest artists of all time.
Fair enough.
Like, I don't think it, not everyone is interested in owning their own label. Also, what the hell is this label called again?
OVO.
Stupid name. Like, come on. Like, you're going to own a label and then talk shit to people who don't and your name is OVO. Get out of here.
funny beef.
Sorry, he's just easy to pick on, isn't he?
Drake is easy to pick on.
That's what I don't get why Kendrick's wasn't that good is I'm like, this motherfucker literally put up a picture of him looking like with his feet turned in with his little
ooh woo.
You what the hell? Like that's so easy to make fun of.
Well, I think that pretty much does it for this episode. This one was a funny scatterbrained episode.
Yeah,
so.
Jesus, we went all over.
Enjoy
the place.
Listening to this. If you got this far, fucking God bless you.
Yeah, really. Sorry guys.
Other than that, yeah, we're a bit depleted after the past few weeks. But I was excited to film. We can end with Rex. Do you have a Rex today?
I completely forgot.
What's
until
new?
Right now.
Get to thinking.
Okay. My Rex is going to be boring. It's going to be the new Beyonce album. I think it's great. I wasn't sure of it at first, especially because it has a bunch of little 30-second skits.
Skits.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it kind of is actually. But I think it's really good. I think the lyrics on some of them are really great. I like the like switch up of some of them being like more hip hoppy beats, not so
country.
Yeah. It's not like too in your face country. It also helps that her voice is, you know, as great as it is. So,
mm-hmm.
But I really liked it. I'm excited to see what she does for the third part, because I think this was so different than the first album, or the
Renaissance.
Yep, Renaissance. I almost said Reformation, girl.
Got clothes on the brain.
Yeah, Renaissance. It's such a different sound to that. So I'm really curious what the third one's going to be.
Sweet. All right, everybody, go check out the new Beyonce record. For mine.
Mine was music related for once.
Yeah, we might swap. I might do a not music related one.
I almost said food, so I'm glad I didn't.
For mine. Oh, you know what?
What?
If you have a pet, the litter robot is sick.
You just got that. We just got it yesterday.
It looks so cool. I can't fully recommend that yet, though. We haven't had it even for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
All right, let me give my actual recommendation.
That is cool, though. I've been getting a bunch of notifications on my phone while we've been sitting here. From the litter.
Cash just going bananas in the litter box.
Well, if they go near it, it like turns off, yeah. Obviously. And like, so it will like tell you every single time.
I know what I'm going to do for my rec.
Go ahead.
I'm going to recommend, if you have a studio, getting some outboard analog synths. I have a couple back here that you've probably seen if you've ever seen our channel. I have like a Juno. I have a Polybrew. I have a DS-88 under my desk. And I have another one on the way. And I've just been lately like loving coming into the studio, not recording anything. And just like screwing around on the synths and being a little bit more hands-on and like letting things be less perfect in my production. So I guess whether it's synths or like analog gear or like live instruments, just try to add like some human touch into your stuff. Try to have something in your studio or in your workflow where you can like be dexterous with it and not just, you know, program in a bunch of stuff. It's been really inspiring to me lately. So hopefully this will inspire somebody to, you know, turn on an instrument that they might not go for because it's a little bit inconvenient. I do think that you get a lot more like mileage out of something like an analog Juno 106, even though you have the same thing inside of Arteria's Juno.
Yeah, makes you be more creative. Plus, if you...
It's just a different side of your brain working. Yeah. Like,
and if you fuck up, it can be like a nice thing sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
I listened to that whole Jack Antonoff tape notes podcast. That's also a wreck. Yeah, like everything inside the new Bleachers album is like so imperfect, it's not even funny. And it's so good. So that's my recommendation.
Wow.
Other than that, I think that's going to do it for this week. If you haven't followed us yet, you can follow us at Make Pop Music on Instagram, on YouTube, the Sound Table, everywhere that you get your podcasts. And then other than that, I don't think I really have anything else to plug. You?
Nope.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll see you guys next time. Much love. Peace.